Oh, my God. I had a piece of cake yesterday. I know. I broke down. I'm not supposed to do that. I swore that I would not eat junk food anymore. No more fried foods. No more birthday cakes filled with icing and chocolate cake and sugar. I swore I would never do that. But yesterday I went to a birthday celebration and I had a piece of cake. And then the host of the party said, "Ron, have another piece of cake." I said, "Oh, no, I couldn't do that because I'm not even supposed to be eating this cake." Not supposed to be, Ron? Who is telling you you can't do something? And I said, "You know what? Damn it, you're right. It was me that told me not to have the cake. But damn me, I'm having the cake anyway. Yes, bring me another piece of cake unto me, to my feet, and I shall eat the cake in all its glory." And I did. And then the host of the party said, "Ron, you apparently love this cake." I said, "You bet I do. I haven't had cake in a long time." He said, "Well, you can have your cake and eat it too." I said, "Yes, I love that phrase." He said, "Why don't you have a third piece of cake?" I said, "Now you're trying to kill me." "Who's trying to kill you, Ron? You only live once. Enjoy another piece of..." I had three pieces of cake with ice cream on every slice of cake. And these were big pieces of cake. Now, today, I feel horrible. Now, I'm going to be going to confession at my local church to confess the horrible, horrible, horrible injustice I've just done to my body as of yesterday with three pieces of cake and three servings of ice cream. I must confess this. And I'm Jewish. I don't even go to confession, but Jews don't have confession. They don't have it because they don't do it. So who do you confess to? What do? I find some great amount of solace walking into a tiny little phone booth, talking to a guy that I can't see, who has some stature apparently, to confess things. And then if they say to me, "Well, Ron, you have to say 10 Hail Marys," I'll say, "No, I don't. I'm Jewish." So this all works out very, very well for me.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I don't understand what I just said.
Whatever.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Good night.
It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Interesting.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Oh, my God. I went out in public yesterday, which I don't like to do because public is there, and I was irate about what the president said in Helsinki, with Vladimir Putin standing next to him. Now, half of you don't know what I'm talking about, and that's what concerns me. That was like the biggest news item ever, where the president sounded almost treasonous to this country. And these people that I were talking to, didn't know what had happened, didn't know what the president had said, nor that the president had even met with Vladimir Putin privately, one-on-one, in a closed room. Nor what the president said to the world in a press conference right after that meeting. They said, "Ron, what happened?" and I felt sad. Because how can you ask me what happened? You don't even keep in touch with the news at all? It wasn't printed in your comic book? You go online. Didn't you even look at the news online? And I won't even go into what the president did and said. But to me, it was pathetic that some people didn't even know what happened. And that's why our country is in turmoil right now. Why we don't do anything about these great injustices that are occurring within our own borders. Because half of America doesn't know what the hell's going on. In other countries, they do. They know very well what's going on in government. I wouldn't say they're obsessed with it, but they're well informed. In this country, people walking around with tongues hanging out of their mouths. And the biggest question to most Americans is, can you tie a cherry stem in your mouth with just your tongue? Seriously? So that's my complaint of the day. I just thought I'd point that out because I believe in my little mind that that's the case. Oh, don't ooh me like that. I won't even get into what the president said as a cover-up for what he said publicly. Everybody is on his ass now saying that was treasonous, Donald. So Donald had to come up with some explanation, so he did. And the explanation is that he used the word would instead of wouldn't because there's a double negative in the sentence. He got screwed up. No, Donald. Everything was written down on a piece of paper for you. And if you're stupid enough to get hooked up by a double negative, then you shouldn't be standing in the White House or sitting behind that prestigious chair. What an embarrassment. Won't even go there. I'm not even going to explain it. Go find it yourself. Go look at the news. Go listen to the news somewhere sometime. Even Fox News was lambasting the president for what he said and what he did. Even Fox News. So you know it was considerable. And you go figure it out yourself. Okay, we have a special show today. I'm doing an interview momentarily with an author about a book that is just fascinating. The scenario is fascinating in the book. And apparently, this somewhat actually happened to him. You'll find this very intriguing, I assume. I mean, I can't tell you what you're going to do or what you're going to find intriguing. That's not my business. That's up to you. So let's do this. Quiet.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Don't worry, no one has to know. This is just between you and me and Ron. We cool?
DB Moffat joins us now. He is an author and quite a prolific one as well. It's a new book that has it come out recently?
The Misbirth?
Yes.
Yes, it came out, I believe, in May.
Oh, okay. All right. Fairly recent.
2018. It's hard to tell because there are drafts and redrafts.
Yeah.
But no, it was available for sale in May on Amazon.
It's getting some great reviews. It's called The Misbirth, and this kind of brings us back to a time when I was younger. This is back in the 50s, I believe, the setting.
Well, Ron, it starts in the 50s.
Okay.
And essentially what happens is there is a high school senior couple mm-hmm. who are forced into a blind date. They go on the blind date, attend the dance, and then cut out and hit Lover's Lane, have a little too much to drink, and they end up pregnant.
Ah.
And the mores, as you said, of the 50s in Americana mandated that they drop out of school, get married,
yes.
and raise their little girl.
It's the law. It's the law.
They did,
yes.
exactly. Anyway, the father, if you will, had deeply embedded mental issues from the beginning, and a unhappy marriage literally ignites those feelings, which erupt when their little girl is 11 and he, abuses her. P.S., the little girl becomes pregnant, the wife finds out, doesn't want her husband to find out, because she's now at this point scared of him, and arranges to have the situation ameliorated. Anyway, the physician who is supposed to take care of the procedure is middle-aged, married, and he and his wife are unable to conceive children. And so he induces birth and brings a little boy home to his wife, who is elated. And they raise the little guy as their own.
Wow.
At the age of 16, he receives a scholarship to a prestigious prep school, athletic scholarship, actually. And one of the inducements that the head of admissions offered him was a personal tutor to help him for the SATs, college admittance.
Yep.
And as it turns out, that 26-year-old post-grad is none other than the little girl that was violated 16 years earlier. And Ron, that's where the book begins.
That's where it begins.
That's where it begins.
That's the first sentence. Wow. This is a I wouldn't say complicated, but it's a very detailed situation. How do you come up with something that is so specifically laid out? Is it something that writes itself, or how did you get to that concept?
Well, unfortunately, personal experience, Ron. But and the characters in The Misbirth are real individuals per se. So that part wasn't. But in terms of writing, I have to know what I'm writing before I sit down in front of the the screen, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I pretty much know 75% of what I'm going to do. I'm not one of these people, what do they call them, pantsers, I think, who can just sit down and bang it out. That I cannot do.
Yeah.
And I'm not that bright, Ron.
Well, it's a fascinating book in every sense. It is based on what did happen in that time period and the ramifications thereof. I have heard that you are very concentrated on dialogue, which I find fascinating. I like to read books where there is an exchange of verbiage going on, because I can connect with that a lot better than explaining what is going on.
Well, I am not. How do I put that? I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was my intent for the book. I wanted it to be a crisp, fast paced, fun book to read.
Yeah.
And most of the chapters open up with dialogue. I mean, I don't think people want to hear about the green trees and the the lawns and everything else. I mean, it's basically depicting the characters in the book.
Yes.
So, and I agree with you, Ron, in the sense that you want to hear people talking.
Yes.
You want to know them, and that's what I try to do. And I appreciate you. I don't know, how do I put it? I appreciate, what my intent was.
Well, yes. I mean, in dialogue, you can read into characters' thoughts and processes, as opposed to someone explaining what those processes are through prose. So I do appreciate that. It all also makes it ripe for a screenplay.
Well, again, you are hitting it. I mean, Ron, you're too smart for me, actually.
Well, I it's a facade. If it's a facade I put on many years ago.
Well, it's a very good facade. Yeah, I'll tell you that, Ron. Yeah. But no. It was geared for screenplay.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Ron, it's kind of interesting because I got an email early this morning from a friend of mine who had written a book, and I wanted him to do the screenplay, and he had gotten involved with a screenplay he had given to, I won't name the female actors and the female actresses, but they absconded with the book and made a movie out of it.
Wow.
So he's kind of licking his wounds with depression and scotch.
Yes, yes. Well, the scotch I can relate to, the depression not as much. But
Ron, why doesn't that surprise me?
I know. So I'm always curious when a book like this comes out, what a writer does in the aftermath. Of course, you promote it and such and discuss it as we are here, but there must be other things going on in your mind right now for the next step.
Well, you know, I started this book when I was finishing my first book, which was called called That Late Justice, which was a political satire.
Right.
And I was told halfway through that project that it was not going to be a bestseller because of the genre of Beltway, which, as I say, was a political satire. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, if I can get this thing published, I can get anything published.
Mm-hmm.
Beltway was published. And then I said, now, this time, I'm going to try to, you know, sell some copy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really the concept.
Yep.
And as I say, the characters and the experiences, with a little bit, Ron, of literary embellishment, are pretty fair description of what was going on.
Yeah. So you took a scenario. When you're talking about embellishment, I mean, you took a scenario. Did you take the scenario beyond the setup? In other words, this is something from experience, and then you took that experience and then brought it forward into fiction a little bit more.
Exactly, Ron. Mm-hmm. You hit it right on the head again. Mm-hmm. Yours is not a facade, Ron.
I actually co-wrote the book with you. You didn't know it. You didn't know it, but I was in.
I didn't realize that you were there, perched on my shoulder. Well, I enjoyed that.
How else would I know?
No. Well, yeah, no, it happened.
Okay.
But no, when I say embellishment, I mean many of the scenes in the book took place, but not as, how do I put it, not as violent as those scenes are written in The Misbirth.
It's very interesting because a lot of what writers do sometimes is they sit down and they write a book or do a project, and then they find that society catches up to that subject matter. A lot of people wrote political books, political satires, and things were rather mundane, and then politically things exploded where now it's a part of our everyday lives, not necessarily in a good way, but it's almost like society sometimes catches up and matches what the book is about, which has just already been written.
Well, it's very true. In the case of my first book, Beltway Justice, I think it's more relevant today.
Yes, it is.
Than it was
when you were writing it.
When I wrote it.
Yeah.
And that was nothing to do with me, Ron. I wish I could take some credit for that, I can't. But no, as I say, you take a chapter in our country's history, whether it be political or as you pointed out, the 50s, and in the 50s, you know, the characters in The Misbirth have to adhere to the social, you know, etiquette of the day.
Right.
So, and that's really what it is. It comes down to, it comes down to fate is really what it comes down to. So.
Well, now, you know, now there's a, there's talk about domestic abuse quite a bit and about mental instability amongst many couples. This becomes now a topic of conversation where years ago you didn't talk about that. So this subject matter also kind of catches up just a bit. And I like the hook where, you know, this is something that a lot of us went through in our younger years, and we can say, yes, that was the way it was, and yes, I can understand how that does happen.
An excellent point, Ron. I think today people are freer to express their life experience.
Yes, very much, very much.
That's essentially what I was trying to convey in the Misbrook.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Now, so what are you working on now?
Well, I haven't had a copy written yet.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but I love the title. And what's happened actually, Ron, is I started the book about a year ago, and I got a phone call. My mother was living in Winter Park. She's 91 and now living with us. P.S. We are trying to find a nice accommodation
gotcha.
For her.
We all go there.
That kind of puts it on. But let me ask you a question.
Sure.
I have the title of this book I started, and I've it's been in abeyance.
Yeah.
But what do you think of this title? The Fall of an Autumn Romance.
Ooh.
Is that Valentine material, Harlequin? What do you think? Maybe I can get you for the cover?
I think on that kind of book, the cover is everything.
I knew I liked you, Rod. I knew it. I feel comfortable with you. You know, it's so funny because many producers of shows and hosts of shows are a little apprehensive about writers. And I said, well, I asked one lady in particular, well, why?
Yeah.
And apparently, Ron, writers, and she said, your contemporaries. I said, what? Your peers. I said, peers? No. And she goes, writers tend to take themselves way, way too seriously.
Oh, ouch, ouch, ouch.
I hear you. And I said, well, Mary Lou, don't worry about that.
Wow.
No, that's one thing you don't have to worry about. You just keep me straight enough to get through the interview. That's all.
Yeah.
And she cracks up. And it was just fun. And it's kind of like the way I feel with you, Ron. I mean, you're just a person.
There are different kinds of talk show hosts. Some of them are just there to hear themselves talk and go on to the next subject. And others, such as myself, I monologue. So what goes on in my brain?
What do you mean by that?
Well,
Ron, I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
Sure, no. I will come up with a subject matter that either annoys me or is worth talking about, and I don't know where I'm going to go with it. I start with a thesis or an idea or some type of grouchy concept, and by the end of the show, it's taken me to different places that I didn't know I was even going to talk about. And that's very similar to a writing process, only it's verbalized in a sense.
No, I see, because you're very how do I put this? You're good on the comics that I used to know.
Yeah,
you're fast on your feet. You can move extemporaneously, which I think is always a wonderful quality in a radio host. Mm.
Well, very nice of you, but I mean, in all due respect, it's the scotch. So.
I knew you were a doer's kind of guy.
Especially at 7:30 in the morning. It's a different kind of concept.
Ron, it is never too late
I'm kidding.
To be too early.
Now,
never forget that. I, And my wife reminds me of that every day at mid-morning. So,
anyway.
No, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, that was interesting because, you know, it was so funny. The first time I saw Cindy, my wife, I was 17, and I punched my friend next to me, and I said, that's my woman.
Wow.
I know.
That's
and he
cool.
looks at me, and
that's
he goes, cool. oh, ha, ha. Yeah. 2 years later, we happened to be working at the same resort.
Yeah.
And I had been unsuccessfully courting, if you will, and we end up in a, I with a couple of friends end up in a bar, restaurant, and Cindy was having dinner with an older college dude, and so my friend pokes me and goes, oh, that's your girl?
Ooh.
I said, So I went over, and I sat down next to her, and I'm confronting the older college dude. And I looked at Cindy, and I said, you know, you can do better than this. And my only intent, Ron, was to provoke a confrontation.
Right, right.
She looks at me. She goes, you just leave.
Oh.
And at 19, nobody talked to me like that.
Right.
But obediently, I got up, and I left. Anyway, I went back to my room and was, you know, enjoying a nice cold Dr. Pepper.
Uh-huh.
And there's a knock on the door, and it's Cindy.
Oh.
She did knock him in my room, but she looked at me and she goes, "I want you to know just one thing."
Ooh.
I said, "What's that?" "The only reason you did not get beat up tonight is because I only date gentlemen."
Oh.
And I looked at her, and I said, no, you're mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I didn't get beat up tonight was because your gentleman was not up to the task.
Uh-huh.
Now close the door as you leave.
Uh-huh.
Well, Cindy slammed the door and just stomped down the hallway. She was annoyed.
Yes.
And I sat back, relishing my Dr. Pepper.
Yep.
And thought, you know, David, you're finally making some progress with this woman.
And you did.
Well, over 40 years later, Ron, we are still happily fighting ever after, kind of thing.
Perfect. That's perfect. Perfect relationship. Hey, it's been fun talking to you. I mean, even when you relay an experience, it sounds like a story, which is pretty cool. And you threw in the dialogue. My God, you got it going.
All righty.
There you
Well, Ron, thank you so much. I mean, I thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And I appreciate Pamela Mornings with, you know, you. And it's just, it's a wonderful thing.
Wonderful.
So,
I'm sure
again,
we'll talk again next time the project comes up or whatever. It'll be nice to talk to you again here on the program.
I would, anytime you're available for me, you know me.
You got it.
Hey, again, thank you so much.
Pleasure. You take care. Well, that'll do it for me today. I hope you enjoyed. I really do. It's my hope and dream that you enjoyed something. Stay in touch with the news. Make sure you know what's going on. It's your country. It's your life. It's your future. It's your children's future. It's the future of the children you don't even have yet. Stay informed. It's not fake news. That's what it's painted as being. What it is information about your life. That is real news. Thank you so much. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.